Welcome to the Practice Podcast, conversations probing the nature of practice. I'm your host, Dave Fearon. Well, this conversation with Tom Casey, who is the founding partner of Discussion Partners Collaborative, will tell you a bit about me as well as a lot about him. This is the fourth time, I believe, that Tom and I have joined for this podcast, and here's what it is about me. I love to talk to people who are looking ahead, making prognoses, reading really big tea leaves, getting a feel for what's coming around that next corner. I've always admired people who do that plausibly, because who really knows what's around the corner? But they've got a pretty damn good idea. And this is part of what Tom offers to their clients and to people who read his books and blogs. So what are we looking at this time? What's around the corner? Well, it's already here, and that is the shaking to the pillars of the trust that we have collectively, perhaps even around the world, in the durability of our institutions. Big picture, right? And big concern. But he focuses on who he listens to very carefully, and that would be the high potential leaders who will be succeeding those who are throwing in the towel for one reason or another. And what they're picking up there is what you'll hear him talk about with me. It's a small sign of a trend, and that is the word disgusted. That capture your interest? It sure did mine. So here is a very with it observer and consultant to two senior leaders, Tom Casey. There are some people, folks, who I can't wait to get back to for another episode. It's a pattern that's emerging in the podcast. There are several people who not only are going through practice changes, and not in the case of Tom, his practice is pretty stable, but what's changed is what Tom studies. And this is Tom Casey. And I should have been prepared to cite a few of the previous episodes, but if you just come back and look down the lineage of this, you'll see how Tom and I have, an evolving theme that was particularly made prominent because all of us have so far, if we're listening, survived the pandemic. Today, not the president, he has COVID, but God help him that he'll be fine. But the fact is that if we heard news that this current president had COVID back before the tremendous effort to have vaccinations, then we would be looking at a very dangerous situation. So rather than keep rambling here, let's put it to the point. Just before I turned on the recording, I said to Tom, I still get the feeling that it's like a big forest fires that they used to have, that after the fires were going, you'd have the ash. It would be raining down, and then the winds would carry it and be raining down far away from its source. So in a way, the ashes of the pandemic and the change that people's lives, group lives, business lives, societal lives are still kind of raining down, and we're looking to see what's there, what's going on. So Tom, this is Tom Casey, who is the founder of Discussion Partners Collaborative. And what's their primary service? Tea leaves, reading them well. And so what are you seeing in the tea leaves now, Tom?
Yeah, we would, you know, thank you, David. It's nice to be back with you. I think that rather than reading tea leaves, I think that we try to stay one chapter ahead in everybody else's book or thought leadership in order to look smart. Okay, I think that seems to be more of the business model of myself and my fellow partners.
I like it.
It's just try to be sponge for what other people are thinking, saying, and what's the implications for the leadership development strategies that we're offering to our clients. But let me extend your metaphor in terms of the forest fire.
Torture away.
Well, maybe, because what's happening is we're rapidly getting to that point where particularly those of us who are older and been around a lot, we have this assumption of sustainability and continuity. And if I extend your logic here, I'm beginning, and my partners and I have been discussing, what happens if we turn on the hose to put out that fire and there's no water?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's actually what has taken us in a new direction in terms of the discussions we've been having. What happened is there's always an inflection point or a pivot when you're talking to current C-suite executives or in some of our service offerings that we're dealing with the high potentials of the future leaders. Mm-hmm. And what happened is in April that in the discussions we were having with high potentials, we were beginning and we were talking about how are they perceiving leadership, and on the geopolitical level, on the commercial level, and on the other levels. They kept using the word disgust. Okay. Wow. And they were articulating it with a degree of militancy. I mean, almost to the point where it felt like, you were having a conversation with an ex-wife or an ex-husband that was like, and another thing, all the things you never got a chance to say were flying at you in terms of this discourse. Wow. And, we collaborate and we say, what's going on? One of the things we always track is what are we hearing we're surprised by? Okay. And it was this. It was
disgust.
And, we would just say, okay, let's go back, ask them what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you got to remember, this is April 22. One example was Will Smith getting up and slapping somebody at the Oscars. And the comments being the only good news is that Chris Rock was also black. Okay. Now, if you follow that logic, the fact that anybody was being slapped at an Oscars and were relieved because, okay, they were of the same color, that suggests turbulence.
Yes.
Definitely. The other examples, and it had nothing to do with Black Lives Matter or racial affinity. It had everything to do with just basic respect. When Justice Jackson was going through her nomination process, it's always a political issue here. I'm going back to Bork, right through Clarence Thomas, mm-hmm. right to Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. That it's a political issue, but it's not an insulting political issue. You don't refer to a justice's findings and recommendations as similar to Nuremberg.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the fact that this is our first black female justice, who by all accounts is going to be a terrific force on the court for decades to come. The only senator standing there celebrating it from the Republican side was Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
And people notice this stuff.
Yeah.
You and I have been around long enough one of the things that will always astound me is when I'd be working with younger associates and I would say, well, what did you notice? They would be talking about what you were wearing, how you behaved, how you resolved the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. We don't appreciate it. And it's not limited to the younger folks. I mean, the older folks are noticing the thing too is, mm-hmm. My wife was a former client and I really was very careful as to what ties I was wearing before I went and saw her. Okay. Cause I knew that was check. But the thing is that the people are observing it. And let me kind of take that. We started tracking it. And I think we wrote a blog that was kind of like heads up to leaders. People seem to be really irritated right now. Be advised. Don't screw up on what you're saying or manifesting lack of empathy.
Be respectful. Yeah.
What happened is, and this is, I'll share a personal story, is when the original draft of what ultimately became the Supreme Court finding on Roe versus Wade came out, when the original draft came out, the high school I attended here in Massachusetts is the people who I graduated with. They've tended as a constituency to become much more conservative. Okay, I would say that I'm a moderate. They're much more conservative than I am. When we go to these reunions and politics begin being discussed, I kind of look in front of me to see if there's any sharp objects that could be used against me, you know, because I being a moderate and discussions with this group, it's sometimes it's not life threatening, but kind of looking forward to somebody saying check please. But what I purposely did is I sat between two women who I did not know well in high school. Okay, I transferred into the high school. But I was very curious as two women who I knew were highly educated, very professional, very conservative, what they thought about what seemed to be the opinion coming out. And both of them said the same thing. It's they don't agree with abortion, but they really don't like the idea of being told what to do with their body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or their children or their granddaughters being mm-hmm. told. That went, you know, and consistent with the 70% of the U.S. who are being polled saying, you guys screwed up. You should have left it.
That's right.
Then what we get dealing with right now, and it's just why we're calling it internally the crucible, is you're looking at, it was just last week, I believe, or the week before, Gallup came out, and it essentially said there's been a decline in our faith in our own institutions over the last 15 years. Huh. Now, we always look at the presidential approvals, okay, and you know, both President Trump and President Biden's numbers plummeted down below 40% and just stuck there during mm-hmm. their entire administrations. We're kind of used to that. We're used to Congress, you know, everybody thinks that they're clown car sometimes, you know, so mm-hmm. they've never been good. But the Supreme Court was actually held in fairly high esteem.
Yeah, you got a point.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it just dropped like a rock. Mm-hmm. And I was watching an interview with, Benjamin Franklin had this quote. Somebody asked him, what type of government did you leave us with? And he says, a republic, if you can keep it.
Yeah.
Okay. And there was an interview with John Meacham right around the time. And I think he was referring to the Gallup polls. So he's the historian that a lot of these folks listen to.
Yeah.
He's an evangelical. I mean, he's just something very smart man at Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. And his prediction was, you know, we had a 200-year run. Maybe it's over. Okay.
Well, when Meacham says that, he wasn't being trying to be provocative to, get some sound bites out of it. I've listened to him off and on for a long while. And he is a scholar, but a very good a spokesman for trends, you know, like you are. So, yeah.
But did you ever think in our dotage, and I'm linking it back to the feedback that we're getting, in our dotage that we would actually be talking about the future of our democracy, no matter how bad things got? Okay. That becomes a topic. And then we look at this whole issue is this is where the word disgust comes in. If you're talking to the younger leaders, future leaders, current leaders, about, you know, how you're seeing the world and how you're seeing leadership in both the abstract and the tactical, mm-hmm. if the word disgust is coming up, you have a problem. Yeah. You know, as I was kidding you, we try to stay two chapters ahead of somebody else's book. But, you know, one of the things that we monitor is one of the things that President Kennedy said when he was throwing down the gauntlet about going to the moon. One of the parts of his quote is, we're not doing this because we're easy. We're doing it because it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And one of the things President Johnson said when he was being chastised by close friends, fellow Southerners, about the promotion of the Civil Rights Bill, he said, "What good is the presidency if you don't do the right thing with it?"
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
And it's leading us up to what we're talking to the leaders, the C-suite executives about right now. And we're referring to it as the crucible. And we consultants, we always like to have a title or a name or something.
Oh, it gets their attention. If they're not sitting up on the rim of the crucible,
looking down in. Yeah, but we use an example about the difference in terms of training, in terms of the armed forces. There went a period where other branches, and I've been in the military associated with it for a long time, and served in two branches, Air Force and then Army, and the training, you know, that was you know, certainly the basic training was difficult. Okay, you know, they dismantle you and then they put you back together, and then you know, channel your energies in directions that are mission critical. The Marine Corps during this period, where the other branches were kind of maybe taking it down a level in the hopes they would get more recruits, the Marine Corps actually upped up the pain and suffering associated with their training. And there was at the time, I'm not sure it still exists, but there was at a time where at the end of a training, there was a day and a couple of days of forced marching, sleep deprivation, challenges, ongoing. And they called it the crucible, basically saying, okay, you're not a Marine until you can achieve this.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good analogy, a scary one, but true.
Well, it helps people organize, helps us organize our thinking when we're communicating with leaders right now, saying, all right, look, we really don't care where you are in terms of leadership anymore. Okay. It's irrelevant. All right. We, as consultants, it's irrelevant. But what you should care is everything that's going on around you and how your associates are looking at it, totally independent of their jobs. Are you as a leader? Okay. And a lack of awareness of that and a lack of taking positions where they're important, that's not going to help you. Okay. If anything, it's going to make you look like a moron. So listen up, look outside what's going on, take positions. And we've talked about this before, engage in the dialogue with your folks. Okay. Take informed decisions and do the best you can. Okay. There's our organization is part of this, movement, if you will. It's called the Council for Inclusive Capitalism. They had it's a global organization. It's sponsored by Pope Francis. It's facilitated by a member of the Rothschild family. And it was looking at, you know, what can be done by organizations like Bank of America, like Deloitte, like Visa, who are all participants in this. What can the big companies do and the small companies do that can support capitalism that benefits more people? Okay, there's basically a trickle-down effect to people in terms of capitalism, but also there's stands that are taken, okay, like climate change and like voting rights, that are important to the employees of their organizations, but just important to everybody. Everybody should be paying attention to it.
Yes.
And they had a global briefing yesterday that I attended because we're involved with it in a very minor way. One of my former clients is the executive director of it, which is how we got introduced to it. But I was listening to this and I'm saying they're thinking along the lines of the crucible that we've been talking to our folks about. Okay. And really? their focus is on capitalism and climate change. Okay. And they're essentially saying is we've all got our positions on this. We need to start thinking about what roles do we want to play in addressing these, because we're not going to get a whole bunch of help. The governments can only take it so far.
Yeah.
That was their logic.
Yeah.
So the net is this disgust issue going back in April. We're talking now the difference between April and July. Mm-hmm. Lots going on in the world. And a lot of people are starting to step back and saying, unless we get organized and stake out a position on this, I used the Noel Tichy cannibalizing a quote from one of his books, Control Your Destiny or Somebody Else Will. Mm-hmm. And what I've been thinking along is I'm, you know, we need to control our destiny or circumstances will.
That's a key point, Tom. And I don't know if a lot of people understand the circumstances just keep happening. That's why they're circumstances. And a lot of people say, well, you know, I can control this and but what I can't control, I will let go. Well, it's fine if the circumstances are less than lethal, but what we're looking at with a hot war going on, not that far from Europe, with all the other things, there's a lot of potential now for the circumstances to gain more power. And because they are not addressed by the largest possible counterforces, which would be companies like you're involved with now, who can assert, who can start changing systems to the extent that more people are less disgusted and more hopeful. So it would be wonderful if that happens while we're still on Earth.
what it'd be, I'm a little
sooner than later. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm a little closer to the dirt nap than the people I'm talking to. But the thing that I keep coming back to is, I would settle for listening up and giving people the benefit of the doubt. Okay, that to me would be a major step forward. I was struck. I was watching the January 6th hearings last night, primetime slot. And the high point for me was the clip where Senators McConnell and Schumer were in the same room, I'm assuming with the leadership of the Senate. Mm-hmm. And they were both saying to the Secretary of Defense, okay, who's a young man, came from Special Forces, was I think the fourth or fifth Secretary of Defense. Had only been there a couple of hours.
Yeah,
they were basically saying, how quickly can you clear this place? Because we need to get on with, and this was Senator McConnell saying, the people's business.
Yeah, I was very encouraged.
Schumer said, this will take days. And the Secretary of Defense said, I'm not on the ground, but give me 5 hours. You know, so that discourse during a really bad day made me feel hopeful that, you know, people could put beside their disagreements, which they have, they can put beside their aspirations, which would be to, you know, have different outcomes. Yeah. But they essentially said, okay, look, this is our job.
Yeah.
You know, we're here to do this, you know, both the senators and the secretary, in fairness. Mm-hmm. You know, that's their job. So they, you know, essentially said, my job is to prosecute this work. This is how I'm going to do it, and this is how long it's going to take. That's going back to the issue here that we're hearing so much about in terms of the high potentials we're looking at is you don't want them to lose hope that we don't know what leadership means. That's the crucible that the discussion partners are struggling with is you don't want the circumstances to translate into a fact, an assessment of your judgment.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And that's where my associates and I are essentially saying to our folks, you need to understand what's going on out there. Okay. Yeah. You need to, you know, the assassination of the prime minister in Japan or the former prime minister in Japan, that hurts you. The grain supplies in the Ukraine, that hurts you. The fact that there's now a closer relationship between Russia and Iran, that hurts you. everything is going to hurt you, and you better understand where it's going to come from, because if not, you're going to be blindsided by something, because there's no good news coming for the short period of time.
I don't know, Tom, of any formal way that we have prepared the younger business leaders for what you've just told them. The way a traditional business school prepares an MBA is like, read the financials, and the rest, right, you know, kind right. of falls into place. I'm exaggerating, but it's certainly not. It's they haven't learned to discuss.
Right.
Like your whole company is about that, and I'm not talking about with each other about how they're going to get through the day. I'm talking about joining the larger discussions that have to be take place, are taking place, and because they can only get so much of this intelligence that you're talking about coming in through media, and right. and then they have to be bold enough to entertain discussions with almost anyone from any of the sectors where a lot of this stuff was raining down. And that means they got to get out of their office if they've gone back. They've got to be more fluid in their movements in terms of where with whom they speak at the local level, state, national, global. The days of having a nice executive chair to sink into and then start pulling the levers, I don't think right. I think they're done and done and done. But you're the guru here. I'm just throwing stuff at you.
We refer to it as the leadership sandwich, which is we're recommending three things to both the high potentials as well as the C-suite. You know, now's a good time to put down the Wall Street Journal and pick up a biography of Winston Churchill.
Yep.
Okay, and start looking at, you know, this was a flawed human being, okay, who got overtaken by circumstances and rose to the occasion. He rose to the moment. FDR was referred to by Oliver Wendell Holmes as a second-rate intellect, but, you know, among the more engaging people that he had ever met. And that engagement is what, you know, got him elected president four times.
Yep.
The issue is you need to understand how that worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
And as the circumstances that we're at, encouraging people to be the other part of the sandwich here, as the circumstances arise, you know, have an organized way of thinking about leaders when they've been tested. Mm. Okay. As these circumstances arise, what were the things you learned from studying those leaders that you translate into how you lead?
Yeah, I like that. Story to story. Yeah. Their story to my story. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's you know, we're all a process. We all assimilate good and bad. Okay. Lessons yeah. learned from other people.
Yes, we do.
So, you know, rather than just rely on assimilation, you know, start going to school on it. Okay, that's the advice we're given. And you know, when your organizations like these folks that are involved in inclusive capitalism take a stand on a societal issue here, not because it's something that is one of your pet issues, but because it's good business.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, we've talked in previous sessions, David, about the organizations, the companies in Europe, and that evolved this concept called purpose-driven capitalism.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, I don't know who coined that phrase, but they, you know, they ought to build a statue for them, because that just sums it all up.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the principle by which we need to be thinking about some of these challenges. You know, regardless if you're a conservative, Democrat, or Republican in the United States, or regardless if you're a Tory or a liberal in the UK, or regardless, I'm going to pick on Peru, as to whether or not you're lean towards socialism or lean towards moderate capitalism. You know, it doesn't make any difference. That's no longer the problem. The problem is, what are we going to do about the challenges? And what can you do about it based on where you sit or where you want to be sitting in the future?
Yeah, that's a good way to pin. That does it.
That's the message we're trying to get across. I mean, one of the things, we're working with a law firm right now that's going through a succession issue. And what we have found, and with the support of the managing partner, okay, is the high potential development has got nothing to do with making the future leaders that are going to be succeeding him better lawyers. They're good lawyers now.
Yeah.
It's how to make them better leaders as lawyers so that the next generation of that company has a future and will grow.
Okay, I hear the word do, and I'm going to reemphasize it because contemplating, discussing, thinking, all of those are precursors. But what I think I hear you now saying, Tom, it's time for the doing. It's time for the doing, because that's where we're going to really test what we know, what we cannot do. There's no more time for just reflecting and just navel gazing. And that call to action, and I'm taking it now to the younger potential leaders, they looking at the ones who have the authority to do something, and they're saying, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it?
Right.
And because if you're not doing something that's going to fix some of these huge or move us in that direction of counteracting some of these circumstances, we're certainly not going to work for you. We're certainly not going to vote for you or whatever else you want from us. We're going to find a way to do it ourselves.
Well, I
think that's called a revolution.
Yeah, well, or an evolution of thinking.
We're going to do it ourselves.
If I take it back to your original example here, is, you know, I want to make sure that I know where that water supply is for the hose to put out that fire.
Yeah.
Okay. I do not want to be surprised by that.
Yeah.
And the other issue is, and if we translate it into doing. Okay. There's three constituencies here. One is your younger people. Mm-hmm. The second is the peer. But the third is your customers.
Yeah.
All right. And if you're sitting on the sidelines and or, you know, promoting concepts that people just are not supportive of, then, you know, your customers are going to suffer. All right. Yeah. I mean, it's
by association, you know, they're not going to wear your logo with pride.
right now, you know, I used to use the Muhammad Ali pity the fool of somebody who went from Arthur Anderson to Enron.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, and I know a couple of those people. Okay, great people had nothing to do with the scandals in either or both, but it did hurt them.
Yeah,
you know, it did the absence of the failure of leadership in both of those organizations.
Yeah,
that led to their elimination from the marketplace.
Yeah,
it was stunning. You know, it's that's what can happen if you don't pay attention.
We've only got a couple more minutes, and I am really fixating now on that notion of not finding the water to put out the fire. So let's give me a little bit more of what is that water that we are going to have to count on to put out these negative trends.
You know, I'm Boston-based, and we're thrilled to pieces that David Ortiz, the first round, is going into the Hall of Fame this weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I read his autobiography, okay? And one of the things I was struck by is the preparation that he and Manny Ramirez back in the period of time where they were stars in Boston, mm-hmm. is to how much time they got ready for whatever pitcher was coming up against them, whatever the weather was, whatever the sunlight was going to be, is how exhausting their preparation was.
Yeah. Okay? That's
so when I'm looking at, you know, the people who've excelled, okay, the regimens of the people that we admire from the sports. And I translate that into the commercial and leadership as leadership. Mm-hmm. It's set ambitious goals, get disciplined, and focus on getting ready.
Yeah.
Because, you know, do not rely on luck that you're not going to be challenged. Because, you know, I would rather take the view that be ready when it happens. Be ready to know where that water supply is when there's a fire. Mm-hmm.
I love it. And I find some hope in that. I find the study that Peter Vail and I initiated together, and I continue looking at particularly the individual, but never in isolation of their situation, system, and circumstances. My point, though, in looking at the individual, like I'm looking at you, is I think that practice is an elevation of readiness that we do for something that matters to us that we never let drop. So we get ever more ready, like Manny Ortiz. I'm sure he was in training right up to the last day.
Manny, I can't let that one go. Oh, David Ortiz, Manny Ramirez. I know you're New York Yankee band, but you know,
I'm talking about them. I'm talking about the guy who runs the Boteco down.
Yeah, but you don't want to.
Manny Ortiz.
Like you don't want to lose leadership listeners.
I may have to edit this piece out just because what a faux pas. But anyway, my point is. The commitment to never being less ready than the day before and more ready the next day, that can translate to a lot of places. But let's put it in summary then to the expectation we have to have of people leading every sort of institution we count on, right down to the people who are preparing for the November 22 elections in little towns like mine. Are these people scared? Are they worried? Are they going to back off, or are they going to be committed to their ethics and their oath and be very ready for the next election? And on all, you name the institution, and the people we count on are serious practitioners of their craft or their art or their obligation as leaders.
I think that, you know, I mean, if I refer back to yours and Peter's theory of practice, and I extend it into the book that mm-hmm. you wrote that just came out,
yeah.
what I looked at in terms of, if I can soundbite the work that you've done and the scholarship and thought leadership that you've both collaborated on, it's elevating practice with the imprimatur is get ready now for whatever happens. Okay. And that's actually what we're realizing is it's not an issue of complacency. It's an issue of I'm using a military term here, is do not limit your awareness of what a threat matrix is right now, because it is very, very broad. Mm-hmm. You know, if mm-hmm. we're engaging in looking at declines of institutions, if we're engaging in actually serious discussions about threats to democracy, inflation running close to 10%, mm-hmm. difficulty finding good people, supply chain problems, climate change, all of the above, dude and dudette sitting where a leadership chair or aspiring to be a leader, you'd better know what the hell's going on outside, because if you are not aware, you will get hurt. It is inevitable. And indirectly, the people working for you get hurt, your customers get hurt, everybody loses.
Wow. Well, this is a very rollicking
fun. Yeah. Just you know, Friday afternoon in 90 degree temperatures, you know.
I'm reaching for a drink and I don't even think. Yeah, I know, but I love the fact that you say these things, and yet I always hear this ring of possibility in your voice, Tom. You see this stuff, you you counsel people in it. You write about it. But let me ask one more question while my clock has got an inch or two more in it. How do you keep yourself up on a day-to-day basis?
You know, the thing is that I'm not a particularly spiritual person, but I think that there's more good people than not good people.
Okay.
Okay. I think there's more unselfish people than selfish people. Okay. But what I also am impressed by, there's a gentleman that I know who's on TV a lot. He was a client and we're still working with the organization. His name is Ian Bremmer.
Okay. I've heard that name, sure.
Yeah, he is Dr. Ian Bremmer, the Eurasia Group. His most recent book is he disaggregated the challenges that are facing the world. And he wrote about them, analyzed them. But he basically, at the end of the day, in his most recent book, he essentially transmitted optimism, saying, you know, hey, we can deal with that. You know, and, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, this is, let's not get intimidated by the challenges and, you know, run and hide and, you know, cry for our mothers. These are really serious things. And I remember, I think I wrote a testimonial for the book on something where, and I know the man, okay, so I was able to personalize it, saying it was nice to be able to put down a book that really should have been depressing me and feel optimistic versus asking the question, is it too early for a single malt? Okay. And that was exactly how, you know, I mean, when I'm out there interacting with my clients, it's like, there's a military metaphor here, is unless somebody died, there still should be hope.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, learn from what happened and then move on, but get ready.
Human ingenuity, man. We've seen it our whole career.
But David, it has. I'm sorry to interrupt you, sir. It has to go beyond platitudes. I mean, I hate hearing, you know, we can do this, we can do this. Okay, you know, from somebody who you know hasn't spent the time to get ready to deal with it.
Let's underscore and re-underscore that point, Tom, because it is awfully important advice for any of us. Regardless of our role in the world right now, it's whatever's coming. We're not sure. We can't be as sure. So let's get ready. Let's just get ready and act as soon as you know you can.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the visible manifestation last night on the January 6th thing. You had the Senator Hawley, you know, I'm with you all the way, and then you know, running in fear of his life within hours after. Okay, and. What did you think was going to happen, Senator? You know, those are the things that you come back is, what is a leader in a business do you think will happen if you're not ready?
That's right. Well, thank you, sir, once again.
My pleasure.
I'll be chasing another conversation. Hopefully, we'll be able to talk about the fact that you're finding people getting more and more ready. That would be cool.
Reverting back, because what makes you optimistic? I know they're out there, frankly, and I know that at the end of the day, there's more people like that than those people who are running through the hall after they raise their fist.
Thank you again, Tom.
You take care, David.
Thanks for listening to the Practice Podcast, where we discuss practice with a capital P. If you'd like to hear more, listen in on Spotify, Automatic, and Apple Podcasts, or go to inactionresearch.com/podcast-page. And if you'd like to learn more about social inaction and the nature of practice, head over to inactionresearch.com for more information. Thank you for supporting this show. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Oh, and one more thing. How could I forget? The book On Practice as a Way of Being is available now in digital form, something that would be new, like podcasting to many of us. And it's a great way of learning more and more about what this podcast presented when Peter Vail and I originated it several years ago. So please come to www.practice.com. mylibrary, one word, .world/practice. And you'll see what I mean. Thank you.